Well, good morning. My name's Nick, in case we haven't had a chance to meet, and it's always good to be in here with you in worship. Before we get into the word, just a reminder that we are in the process of forming some new small groups. So if you're interested in jumping into a small group this fall, there's some lovely people right outside these doors that are available for you to answer any questions and sort of explain to you how that works. But we're convinced, and y'all better make some noise if you agree, we're convinced that life is just better together, right? Yeah? That if you're in a place right now in your life where you're wanting to experience some breakthrough, you're wanting to see some things change, you're wanting to experience growth, I promise you that always happens best in the context of community, right? As we allow other people in. So again, there's some folks out there who can answer questions and help you point you in the right direction. Please stop by after worship. A couple of weeks ago, I was having one of those days. You know what I'm talking about? I just finished up a lunch meeting and I was over there by Target. And I needed some new underoos, okay? Some of you are like, that's too much information. I promise you, it's an important detail, okay? If you don't know what underoos are, you can ask your neighbor, right? But I needed some new ones, went into Target. Thankfully, there's a sale. And so I purchased like the biggest package of underoos I've ever bought in my entire life. I say weird things now that I'm a parent, like underoos, potty. Like, it's not my fault, it's my kid's fault, right? So I'm heading back to the church in my car. And maybe you've heard me talk about our beloved Greta the Jetta. It's our 2000 and white turbo diesel Volkswagen Jetta, okay? It looks like a bunny rabbit, but it sounds like a tank, okay? And we have this weird thing of naming things in our family, or our kids name things in our family. They named our fridge Wendy, which is kind of clever if you think about it, right? But I've referred to this car as Greta the Jetta for as long as I can remember. My wife bought the car when she was in high school. I've been driving it for probably the past 6 years. The past 2 years, it's been hanging on by a thread. Right, we've sort of known that Greta's days are numbered. Her last day was quickly approaching. Little did I know that last day had come. So I'm driving on Old Cherokee, and there is sort of the usual solid line of traffic behind me, right? Tons of cars, tons of people behind me. I'm driving, and all of a sudden, the transmission does whatever the transmission does when it goes, like blew up. Okay, let's make it really dramatic. Like, I'm serious, like I suddenly realize I'm just coasting. I've got no gas. Right? And I realized the power steering isn't working anymore. My brakes aren't really working anymore. That's kind of a good thing, though, because we're starting to go up a little bit of an incline. And remember, solid line of traffic behind me. Okay, Greta the Jetta has had no air conditioning for a very long time, so she's always a little hot. But at this point, I'm sweating buckets, right? I'm like doing the rocking thing, like trying to make sure the car, we just gotta get it up this hill. Come on, baby. I had this horrible like picture in my head of pushing my car down Old Cherokee with all these people honking their horns at me. Well, somehow by the grace of God, Greta the Jetta coasts into the elementary school parking lot right across the street. Park it, she's dead. I mean, dead. Greta is dead. Dead. I mean, not working, nothing. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, this is kind of like an awkward distance from the church. You know, it's like far enough to still be a walk. I'm going to walk down Old Cherokee, but it's like, I can see the church from where I'm at. So like, do I call somebody to have them come pick me up? I mean, I'll probably be there by the time they got in their car. So I decided to walk, right? I grab my big package of underoos. And I'm just sweaty. I'm just soaking wet. I'm sweating so much. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, how am I going to break this to my family? My kids are going to be devastated. It's like, Greta's dead, you know? I love that car. So I'm walking, I'm thinking about all of this, and I happen to step into, like, the biggest pile of fire ants I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, it just start tearing me up. They're in my shoes, they're in my pants. I'm like, I got this, just picture this. Pastor Nick on the side of Old Cherokee with this gigantic thing of underwear. I'm just swatting at these fires. Get off, covered in sweat. And it's one of those days. You've had one of those days, right? There was this moment I remember after it was kind of all over, standing on the side of the road, just looking up going like, really? I mean, really? It's like, does it have to be this hard? I'm just curious, you ever found yourself there before? You ever had one of those days? You ever had one of those moments, right? So that's what life does. So these seasons, these moments, these times in our lives where we ask that question, does it have to be this hard? And it's not always from just a moment like that. Some of us, like you live with this smoldering sense of frustration about something in your life. Maybe it's a difficult relationship. Maybe it's a circumstance. Maybe it's your job. But there's something that's just eating at you. It's just kind of always there, right? Or maybe for you, it's this like It's not so much frustration as it is disappointment. There's somebody, there's something, there's a relationship or whatever, but for some reason it just leaves you feeling slacking. It's letting you down. It's disappointing you. Am I talking to anybody, right? And we have to wonder, like, does it have to be this hard? Here's the short answer. No. It doesn't. And something I'm learning, and I hope that we can all learn this together, is that I actually have a whole lot to do with that. Like what I mean, when I get quiet, right? When I do spend some time sort of thinking on my life, particularly about those two things, like where am I frustrated at? Where am I disappointed? When I really think about those areas of my life, often what I find is there's something that I'm doing or not doing that's making life harder than it has to be. Sometimes it's obvious, right? It's this thing that I keep doing over and over and over again, and I'm expecting different results, but it keeps turning out this way, but I still keep doing it, right? Or often it comes from a certain perspective that I have that needs a shift. I need to change the way that I think about something. And often, this one gets the best of me, and it probably gets the best of you quite a bit too, but often it has to do with my expectations. It's what I'm expecting from maybe this other person. It's what I'm expecting from this relationship. It's what I'm expecting from this situation that needs to change. Because I'm holding on to it so tightly, and what it's doing is it's actually making life harder than it has to be. Now, I'll go ahead and say it. I'm not the only factor, right? There's some annoying people in the world. Can we get amen to that? There are just people that are just hard. They're difficult. So you're not the only factor, but you know, we are one of the factors. We're one of the factors, and sometimes life is hard because hard things happen, right? Hard things happen that maybe aren't even our fault, that we certainly weren't ready for, but I found that often hard things can get the best of us because we don't respond to them in the right way. So again, a lot of this is on us. So for the next several weeks, we're starting this brand new message series called Life Hacks, and what we're going to do throughout this series is we're going to learn from the book of Proverbs. It's a great book. And learn from the book of Proverbs about how to work with life and not against it. How many like the sound of that? Sounds nice, doesn't it? Now, life hacks. Some of you maybe aren't sure what a life hack is. First time you've ever heard of it. Allow me to educate you. A life hack is something that makes some area of your life more efficient than it was before. And it usually involves like using something in a slightly different way than the way you use it on an everyday basis. And it like leaves you going, why didn't I think of that? It's brilliant. It's kind of been there the whole time, and it just involved you kind of tweaking it a little bit. So here's an easy one, a classic life hack. You're at a restaurant where you have to go pump your own ketchup into a little cup, which just sounds gross when you say it out loud, right? But you know what I'm talking about, those little white cups you gotta get your ketchup in. And if you got a family like mine, my kids are, ketchup's like another food group. It's like they want a little hamburger and a lot of ketchup, right? And so often what I'm doing is I'm going back and forth like 15 times, or I have to go get one tray and put 20 things of ketchup because they're so tiny. You know what I'm talking about? Well, if you look at it, these cups are actually folded like an accordion in a circle, help make them a little stronger, right? So if you, it's a life hack, if you were to smooth out all of the folds, you can actually get like 4 times the amount of ketchup in these little cups. Here's a picture to illustrate. Just blew your mind, didn't I? Now your trips to Wendy's will be way more efficient than they were before. You're welcome, right? But it's a life hack. Life hack is all about working with life and not against it. This is exactly what the book of Proverbs is all about too. The book of Proverbs is 31 chapters about the greatest life hack of all time, wisdom. Y'all say wisdom. Now, what I want to do right now before we get into a particular text is I want us to talk about the book of Proverbs. I want to pique your interest, pique your curiosity in the book of Proverbs. I'll just call it like it is. The reality is the majority of us in this room, we never crack a Bible open during the week. My hope is I can get you at least curious in this, so maybe you'll start reading it on your own, and I promise you, you won't regret it. So this book's about wisdom. What is wisdom? Because often wisdom gets confused with intelligence. They're not the same thing. Wisdom doesn't have anything to do with your SAT scores, your IQ, your GPA. We should hear a collective shoo from the room, right? I always struggled with standardized testing. It just didn't seem to fit sort of in that box. But wisdom isn't about that. Wisdom isn't about being able to retain a whole bunch of information. I know a whole lot of smart people who aren't very wise. Wisdom is different than that. Let me show you what I mean. We'll go to the very beginning of the book. Proverbs chapter 1, starting in verse 1, says this: "The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel." So this book is often attributed to King Solomon, who is David's son. He's the guy who got to ask God for whatever he wanted, and he asked for wisdom, right? Now, we don't know if Solomon actually wrote every single proverb. More than likely, he didn't, but they get attributed to him as a recognition that these are wise. These are things you need to pay attention to, right? Because Solomon was the wisest man who ever walked the face of the earth. Verse 2, "These proverbs are here for gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what is right and just and fair." Verse 4, "For giving prudence to those who are simple." I'm gonna stop here for a second. Prudence isn't a word we use very often, right? But I believe that this verse right here has a lot to offer us in terms of understanding what wisdom actually is. If you start reading through the book of Proverbs, you're gonna notice these two things paired together quite a bit. The simple and prudence shows up over and over and over and over again. And often it shows up in a way where it seems obvious that prudence is something that the simple need. So simple people are lacking in prudence. This word simple in the Hebrew, which is the original language of Proverbs, can also be translated as seducible. So they're suckers. They're easily deceived. Sometimes it's translated as naive. Like, I think about somebody who's simple, and it's somebody who sort of lives on the surface of things. They're not very deep. They don't give a lot of thought to how they're living their lives. They just kind of stay on the surface of it, right? They don't give a lot of thought to their actions. They're kind of reactionary. They just sort of react to whatever comes their way. Whatever, there's not much thought there. You follow me? That's who the simple are. Prudence is the opposite of that. Prudence can also be translated as subtlety or nuance. Prudence is when we sort of step back and we begin to ask questions about what's actually going on. Prudence is when we give thought to how we're living our lives. Give thought to what we believe in. When we think critically about these things. It's sort of like when we lift up the hood and we want to know what's really going on here. What's really happening here? So wisdom gives prudence to the simple. What wisdom wants to do is move us from a surface level reactionary kind of life out into deeper waters where we learn how to live intentionally. Now I want to ask what I hope is a sobering question for you. It goes something like this. How much of your life would you say you're actually living on purpose right now? Like when you think about your calendar, think about how you spend your time, your energy, your money, your resources. Lay it all out there, right? Lay it all out there. Look at it. Think about it. How much of that is a reflection of what you think matters most in life? And how much of it is a reaction? It's a reaction to certain social pressures that tell you you've got to live a certain way. It's a reaction to sort of whatever just happens to come your way at that moment. Man, I do this sometimes, right? It's like whenever you find yourself busy, you ever been there before? We're American, yes. You're feeling busy, you're feeling stressed, you're feeling anxious. Do you ever just stop and go, wait a minute, why? Like, why do I feel this way? And then it's funny how you start hearing, well, you have to, because you gotta do this, and you gotta do that, and you've gotta be here, and you've gotta be that for those people. And then I stop and I ask, why again? Why? Why do I think I have to do all of that? And it's funny when you start asking that question, so many of the things that we think are important, guess what you find out? Not really important. We're just doing this because we did it yesterday. We're just doing this because that's what we think we have to do. So this is about living intentionally. That's a sobering question, right? I mean, how much of your life would you say is actually lived on purpose, and how much of it is a reaction? Because what wisdom wants to do is help us think about this stuff, to live more in line with what we think actually matters most. Can anybody benefit from that in the room? You out there? Remember, I'm wireless. I can come sit in your lap. At the same time, this is important. Wisdom isn't just some new trendy advice. It's not about just getting a little piece of advice to get us out of a jam. It's way bigger than that. In fact, if you were to jump to Proverbs chapter 8, it's this really fascinating passage where wisdom's like personified. Wisdom's given a voice, and wisdom speaks to us like it's a person, right? And here's what wisdom says. Chapter 8, verse 22. The Lord brought me forth as the first of his works. Before his deeds of old, I was formed long ago, ages ago, at the very beginning when the world came to be. Wisdom's not some new fad. Wisdom has been here since the beginning. And if you keep reading, it goes on to explain how wisdom had a hand in bringing everything into being. Wisdom gave meaning and purpose to everything that we see today. It's been around for a while, which I love hearing that because everything right now is like so trendy and gimmicky. It's like the newest health fad, right? It's like the latest and the greatest. God forbid you mention you're tired on Facebook. You get all these like direct messages. Let me tell you about this new product I can sell you. It's based on all this new fascinating research, right? Everything's kind of trendy and gimmicky. This thing's in and true and good, and then like 5 years later, that's garbage. This is new, and wisdom's not about that. Wisdom's been here since the beginning. Goes on to say this. I love this part. Chapter 8, verse 30. Wisdom speaking again. So I was constantly at his side, talking about God, the creator. I was filled with delight day after day, rejoicing always in his presence, rejoicing in his whole world and delighting in humankind. Essentially, wisdom loves life. Wisdom's a big fan of people. Wisdom's a big fan of the world. What wisdom wants more than anything is to wake people up to how amazing all this really is. That's what wisdom wants to do. But it finishes by saying this: for those who find me find life and receive favor from the Lord, but those who fail to find me harm themselves. All who hate me love death. See, wisdom isn't just about getting some advice that we're gonna listen to from time to time, or some little piece of information that we might add to everything else. Wisdom's bigger than that. Wisdom's about learning to see the world in a totally different way. It's about being willing to change everything about how we live our lives. And this is so important because there's some of us in this room who only think critically about how they're living and the choices they're making when they find themselves in a jam. I mean, when all of a sudden do you get concerned about the choices you're making in the life you're living? So something bad happens. It's when you're uncomfortable. Then all of a sudden it's like, well, I got to get out of this. Like, just give me some wisdom real quick, pastor man. Give me some wisdom, preacher. Maybe I'll open my Bible. Maybe look for some good insight. How do I fix this? How do I make this problem go away? How do I get this thing that's uncomfortable? How do I make it comfortable again? Just tell me how to do that, right? We just want some advice. But what happens? We get the advice. We do the thing. The problem goes away. But then what do? We go right back to how we were living before. And nothing ever really changes. If I'm honest, most of us aren't really looking for wisdom. We're just looking for a life coach. We're just looking for a little information. I'll use this when I need it, but otherwise I'm just gonna kind of do my own thing. And we keep making the same mistakes. We keep living into the same patterns. Proverbs has got a word for this. It's called the fool. There's one real colorful way of saying it where it says, as a dog returns to its vomit, a fool returns to its folly. Wisdom says, hey, let me change the way you see all of this. Let me change the way you live your life, the way you're a human. Let's change all of that. That's what we're entering into when we talk about wisdom. It's not for the faint of heart. Can I get an amen to that? So for the next several weeks, we're gonna be learning about wisdom. If you wanna work with life, not against it, this might require you changing everything. Changing everything about how you think about yourself, what you think's important, what you give your time to. Can you dig it? Life hack number one. You ready for this? I feel like we need a drum roll or something. Life hack number one. Okay, you can. If you're gonna do it, right? This is gonna give me a half-hearted drum roll. Go, drum roll. Life hack number one. Stop expecting life to behave. Stop expecting life to behave. And one of the ways we make life way more difficult than it has to be is we expect it to behave. But there's this larger observation about the book of Proverbs that I think is really helpful for us in light of this. The teachings in this book, they're not meant to be understood as like promises about how things are gonna go. Don't read Proverbs like that. Don't read Proverbs as God saying, do this and this is gonna happen. Instead, I think you have to read Proverbs, they are observations about how things tend to go. Not how they're guaranteed to go, but how they tend to go. This is an important distinction. Let me show you. Proverbs 26, verse 4 says, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will be just like him." So clearly it's telling us, don't get into an argument with a fool. Don't confront a fool. Don't try to change their mind, or you're gonna end up looking just like them. You've been there before, right? There's that person, and I'm gonna let them have it. I'm gonna give it to them. Next thing you know, you're yelling, you're screaming, you feel like an idiot, and you're like, "Oh, that didn't go so well," right? You've been there. Don't do that. Don't even, if they're stubborn and not changing their mind, don't waste any time on them, right? But then listen to verse 5. That's verse 4. Here's verse 5. Verse 5 says, "Answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes." Wait, what? Is there a typo? It's clearly saying here, no, confront a fool. Confront a fool. Show them the error of their ways, or they're going to keep thinking they're right. Which makes me wonder, which one are we supposed to do? Are we not supposed to answer a fool? Or are we supposed to answer a fool? To which Proverbs, to which wisdom would say this, yes. Yes. Because sometimes you should. And sometimes you shouldn't. Sometimes that's the right thing to do. Sometimes it's not. Wisdom is about knowing which one to do when. Now this is based on a really big assumption about the world, about life. It's not static. Life doesn't stay the same. Life changes. People are different. Circumstances from one circumstance, it's a totally different world. Sometimes the most healthy life-giving thing is to confront somebody. Sometimes the most healthy life-giving thing is to not confront them. So life isn't static, right? I mean, and you see this in an even more profound way when you look at the book of Proverbs alongside of other books in the Bible that are about wisdom. There's a whole genre in the Bible called wisdom literature. For instance, the book of Ecclesiastes comes right after the book of Proverbs. It's like its grumpy friend. Some of y'all came to a study with me this summer on Ecclesiastes. Make some noise if you're in the room. Oh, wow. Slackers. Ecclesiastes is also about wisdom, but it sort of comes at it from a different angle. Let me show you what I mean. First, we'll start in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10. We're going to look at this verse a bit more in depth here in a second, but just listen to this passage. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For through wisdom, your days will be many, and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, your wisdom will reward you. If you're a mocker, you alone will suffer." Basically, what it's saying is, hey, if you're wise, if you make good decisions, it's going to go well for you. Life's going to turn out better for you. You may even live longer than the person who isn't wise, to which we're like, yeah, makes a whole lot of sense. Then Ecclesiastes, though, I love Ecclesiastes, comes flying in. Listen to what Ecclesiastes says. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 14. "There's something else," you gotta read it like this, "there's something else meaningless that occurs on the earth. The righteous who get what the wicked deserve and the wicked who get what the righteous deserve. This too, I say, is meaningless." Just think about this. I love it. I like thinking about these like two people and they're having a conversation, right? Proverbs is like, hey, listen, if you do A, B, and C, then D is going to happen. It's probably going to happen. It's going to turn out well for you. To which Ecclesiastes comes running in and throws the flag. Baloney! Not so fast. No. Look at the world around you. How often do you see bad things happen to really good people? And sometimes really bad people, they seem like they get all the luck. All the good things happen to them. Explain that to me, Mr. Proverbs, right? Again, what's the temptation? Well, which one's right? Both are. Both of them are true, right? I mean, you can see it's important for us to make good decisions, to understand that what we do with our life, it matters. The choices that we make matters. It's important to live intentionally, but the danger is when we think that our choices determine every single outcome. You can do right all you want, wrong's still gonna happen. Life hack number one, stop expecting life to behave. This is where we get into trouble, folks. We get into trouble when we expect that. I mean, a lot of people come to faith, Jesus, Bible, church, spirituality. Some of you are here right now because you're wanting to discover the secret sauce, the magic formula that's gonna make all your problems gonna go away, that's gonna sort of keep you from experiencing any sort of diversity. Let me just save you some time. That's not what wisdom's interested in. That's not what faith or true spirituality is interested in. What it's interested in is helping us bob and weave with whatever life throws our way. It's helping us understand not how to escape adversity, but how to actually go through it well, in a healthy way. This is what true spirituality, wisdom, faith is really concerned in. And I can imagine that some of you are here today and the bottom's dropped out, hasn't it? Something really hard has happened. Something difficult. Somebody you love is gone. Either they passed away or they abandoned you. You've been betrayed. Maybe you've been fired. I mean, something really hard has happened. But you've been spending so much energy asking the question, why? Why? Why did this happen? Which is often what we do when something really bad happens. We get so fixated on this question, why? It's a dead-end question. Sometimes there isn't a why. Or sometimes the why is way too complicated for us to ever understand. What I want to invite you to do this morning is start asking a different question, a better question. What now? That's the question that matters. I mean, in life, there's so much that's going to happen that we can't control. People are going to die. People are going to get diagnosed with cancer. You're going to get betrayed. You're going to get hurt. People are going to leave. It's going to happen. You're aware of that. We can't control so much of that. The one thing we can control is how we respond to it. Later in the book of Proverbs, it talks about being able to laugh at the days to come. Being able to laugh at the adversity that comes our way. Wouldn't you like to be able to get there? First step is expecting it. First step is to stop expecting life to behave, which leads us to life hack number two. You don't have to drum roll. It's old, tired. Just get with it, right? Life hack number two, in the midst of all of this uncertainty, it is so important for us to keep the main thing the main thing. And this may be the most foundational teaching in the book of Proverbs. It's the most foundational teaching in the entire Bible. Keep the main thing the main thing. Proverbs 9:10 said it like this. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Fear of the Lord is the most repeated commandment in the scriptures. Did you know that? Most repeated commandment. You'll find it more than any other command in the Bible. Fear the Lord. Fear the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Let's unpack this a bit because I think the language can be a little misleading, right? We hear that word fear and it's like, so I'm supposed to be afraid of God? I'm supposed to be sort of terrified of God? No, I think that's what this is talking about. Because in the Old Testament, where we find the book of Proverbs, we're also reminded over and over again of God's hesed, God's loving kindness, God's unwavering acceptance of us. In the New Testament, we're told in the letter of 1 John, that perfect love drives out fear. So I don't think it's talking about some sort of paranoia, right? Or some sort of worry or fear about how God feels about us. It's a bit different than that. In the Hebrew, the word here is this word yirah, and it has a range of meanings. Sometimes it means to feel fear out of anticipation for some sort of danger or pain. But this word can also mean awe or wonder, reverence, amazement. I like to think it's when you and I, when we go, whoa. Why don't y'all do that with me right now? Ready? One, two, three. Whoa. You guys did that way better than 9 o'clock was like this. Whoa. No, it's like this. Whoa. Look at that. And you know what I'm talking about. It's like in those moments where we're actually aware how beautiful this all is. It's like those moments where we're actually aware of what matters most and what doesn't matter. You know these moments. Abraham Heschel, this famous Jewish theologian, he understands this word, this Hebrew word, as awe. It's how he refers to it. I love what he says. He says, awe is a sense for transcendence, for the mystery beyond all things. It enables us to sense the ultimate and the common and the simple. I love this part. What we cannot comprehend by analysis, we become aware of in awe. What we cannot comprehend by analysis, what you can't figure out, you become aware of when you go, whoa. Two moments immediately come to mind. One is, it wasn't long after I moved to South Carolina and I was at the Bible college. some group of people went up to a pretty place in the mountains. You know what I'm talking about? Raise your hand, been to pretty place. Pretty place to chapel or something on the side of a mountain. They didn't spend a lot of time thinking about what they were going to name it, right? They're like, it's pretty, and it's a place, pretty place, right? It's beautiful, but I'll never forget going there, and like you walked into the chapel, and everybody was like whispering. I was like, why is everybody whispering? There's nothing going on in here. There's no signs. Like everybody's like, shh, shh, shh. Like what? Just talk. Then I saw the view, and it made sense. It seemed sort of weird to not whisper. It's like, whoa. Everybody's whispering because they're afraid they're going to like scare the view away or something. But you've had a moment like that, right? Where it's like, man, you just, wow. It's beautiful. It doesn't always happen in those big places either. Sometimes it happens, you know, looking at your kid's face. These moments where we're just sort of caught off guard by how beautiful the world is. That's fear. That's yirah. That's awe. That's wonder. Second moment that comes to mind is when I was in Haiti the last time. And I shared this moment a while back. We were getting a tour of an orphanage. And we came across this little girl who was laying in a room back by herself. And her breathing was really labored. She was asleep. And she had a fever. And when I looked at that girl, I saw my daughter. And it was like in this moment, it was really painful. But at the same time, it's like in that moment, I was so aware of what actually mattered. And I was so aware of what doesn't matter. Guess what I wasn't thinking about? Most of the trivial garbage I think about when I'm here. Things that people think about me. Do I have this or do I have that? Like that stuff doesn't matter when you're sitting there looking at that. It's funny how all that just sort of falls away. And for a moment, it's clear. It's clear what matters most. You talk to people who are on their deathbed. Guess what they have? Yirah. They know what matters most. The sad thing is it takes us forever to find that. Proverbs wisdom says, you want to experience life? Start there. Keep the main thing the main thing. Man, you want to experience life, like life to the full? Here's what you do. You start with God and you never leave there. You make your home in God. You ground yourself in God. You see everything and relate to everyone through the reality of God. You keep the main thing the main thing. And here is probably the biggest way in which you and I make life way more difficult than it has to be. We ask life to do things for us that life cannot do for us. We ask the things of life to give us things that the things of life will never be able to give us. It's like we got our hands around it, choking it out, saying, make me feel content. Make me feel alive. Make me feel better than I do right now. And guess what? Life can't do that. Let me illustrate. Maybe this will help. So I've got right here this wonderful picture of a sunset. Everybody go, wow. Come on, go, wow. This picture was taken by William Baker on staff, super talented guy. Didn't take this picture. My wife loves a good picture of a sunset, by the way. We live in Irmo, drive across the dam all the time. And every single time we drive across the dam, when there's a sunset, she takes a picture. She has like 1,400 pictures of a sunset on her computer. It never gets old for her, right? Now, this picture is beautiful. You could hang it up on a wall, couldn't you? You could put it as your screensaver if you still do that sort of thing. Be the background of your cell phone. It's a pretty picture. You could look at it. You could be inspired by it, couldn't you? But here's where you might get in trouble. Let's say you were in a dark place, really dark place, and you needed some light. You would be mistaken if you thought you could take this picture out and for it to give you any light. Or let's say you were in a cold place. It was cold, and it's hard to imagine here in South Carolina. But it's frigid, it's freezing cold, and you need some warmth. You'd be mistaken if you thought you could pull out this picture of the sun and get any real sense of warmth from it. You will not find light or warmth from a picture of the sun. You will only find that in the real thing, in the sun itself. And this is the biggest way in which we're our own worst enemies. This is the biggest way in which we make life harder than it has to be, is because we demand life that it should give us things that it just simply can't give us. Simply cannot give us. Let me give this back. Thank you, sir. See, as like humans, We have this thing in us. I call it the big, deep, empty. It's just that sort of, sits right there in your stomach. And oftentimes we're moving too fast. We don't really pay attention to it. But like when things get slow and it gets dark and we're alone or by ourselves, we're listening to like Bruce Springsteen songs. You feel it, don't you? It just sits right here, big, deep, empty. We don't like to feel that. So we do whatever we can to distract ourselves from it, don't we? We grab at this, we grab at that, we pursue this, we pursue that. We chase all these things, we go after all this stuff, but the thing is, it doesn't really work. It may distract us for a little while, but it's only a matter of time before we feel it again. Oscar Wilde said this, said there are two tragedies in life. The first is not getting what you want. And the second is getting it. I see this all the time. Particularly when people move into that long middle of their life. Like a long middle starts in like your mid to late 30s and goes on to whenever it goes on. You know what I'm talking about? It's like, it's when things aren't new and shiny anymore. You've got the marriage. You've been in it for about 10 years. They used to look really pretty. Now you're kind of like, they're pretty, but just gonna. That's what gets on my nerves, right? Your kids aren't cute little babies anymore. Now they're like teenagers and they're really annoying. Your job was the greatest thing that ever happened. And now you've been there for 10 years and you're tired of all the people. You know what I'm talking about? Like nothing's new and shiny anymore. And when it was new and shiny, what it did was it distracted you from that big, deep empty. You didn't feel it. It was like, oh, this is great. All this new stuff. This is awesome. I love it. It's wonderful. But then after you've been in it for a while and that big, deep empty comes back and you're like, I'm not so sure about all this. Maybe I married the wrong person. Because if I married the right person, they wouldn't make me feel like this, would they? Maybe I just need to find a different job, right? Or maybe I just need to get something else. And so what we do is we just go after all this other stuff. And the scariest thing is that people are chasing down stuff that they can actually catch. It's like a dog chasing a car. What are you going to do once you catch it? Then what? Proverbs tells us, keep the main thing the main thing. If you want to experience life, if you want to experience all that to the fullest, you start with God and you stay there. It's like, imagine how much more you'd enjoy your job if you didn't expect it to complete you. How much better would your marriage relationship be if you didn't hold your spouse accountable for your own insecurities? And it's funny how you can enjoy the things that you have and the people in your life when you stop expecting them to complete you. Are you with me? This is where wisdom begins. This is how wisdom is sustained. It's the ultimate life hack, folks. The Gospel of John actually presents Jesus to us as wisdom in the flesh, like wisdom with skin on. This is what the author of John does. And I'll show you chapter 1 the Gospel of John. You probably know these words. It says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. Hopefully that sounds familiar to you. The author is pointing back to Proverbs chapter 8. Jesus is this wisdom come to us in flesh and blood and skin and bones. I mean, Jesus shows us who God is, but Jesus also shows us who we were meant to be and who God ultimately wants to make us into. He shows us what life looks like when it's lived on the highest plane. Chapter 1 goes on to say, in him was life, and that life was the light of all humankind. This is where it starts, and this is where it stops. We can experience a really beautiful life, but it's going to require us to keep the main thing the main thing. It's going to require us to entrust ourselves to God. It's going to require us to open ourselves up and to surrender to the saving love of God. Maybe you're here today and you've never done that. I want to encourage you to do it this morning, right here, right now. We move into this next song, and I'm not up here to give you a specific thing to say. Just be honest with God. Say whatever it is on your heart. What do you want to say to God? What do you want God to do in you? And if you happen to do that, please come talk to us. There's people available in the prayer room. They'll pray with you if you'd like. But a lot of you in this room are probably like me. You've done that before. You just have this habit of forgetting it. My former pastor used to say that about every 24 hours, he loses a healthy fear of God. That's me. I struggle to keep the main thing, which is exactly why every single morning, I have got to find time to remind myself of what's true, to remind myself of what matters. And here's what I know. Most of us in this room, we don't do that. We come here once a week. We listen to a message and we expect to get it. We expect things to change, but they don't really change, do they? So whatever else you do this week, I want to encourage you to do this one thing. Find time to do that, please. Find time to do that. Grab the Checkpoint resource available. It's a devotional that'll help you throughout the week. You can download it off the website. But just find some time this week as we start this new series to meet with God, to develop some prudence, to start looking beneath the hood and asking God to meet your deepest needs, to help you keep the main thing the main thing. I'll leave you with a prayer that I have found to be very helpful for me. I don't just say this in the mornings. I say it throughout the day. Sometimes I have to say it like I breathe. It's helpful. It goes like this. Oh Lord, purify my heart to long for the one true thing and be distracted by nothing. So when you find yourself feeling a bit reachy, feeling like maybe you're asking something to do more for you than it can actually do, say this prayer. Lord, purify my heart. Help me keep the main thing the main thing. Help me long for the one true thing and be distracted by nothing. As we sing through this last song, I want to invite you to ask the Holy Spirit maybe to reveal to you to something in your life, a relationship, a thing, whether you have it or you don't, but there's something in your life that you're asking to do for you, something that it can't do. Invite the Holy Spirit to bring that to the front of your mind. Name it, speak it, confess it, and ask God to take its place. You pray with me? God, we need you. We need you so much. We thank you for just the opportunity that we have in being alive. This world is beautiful. This life you've given us is amazing. But let us not see it as a replacement for you. Help us to see it as a gift from you. Turn our eyes towards you. Purify our hearts. Help us keep the main thing the main thing. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.